You are listening to
In the Now.
We've had to shut down all Group 7 personnel just for weakness security. Someone with that access has been tampering.
I hope you don't think it's me.
You want to break into the system?
Tried to.
All right, everyone, welcome to the February 8th edition of the In the Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with my distinguished sidekick.
VR, feeling good being distinguished tonight.
All right. Well, once again, we have lots of good information and maybe some more updates on the Arizona conference idea that we talked about during our last show. Excuse me.
Oh, goody. I've got my calendar out and waiting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you some updates on what's going on with that. And, well, here's the news. Well, I found an interesting poll of the most popular distributions, Linux distributions, and percentage rate from one time to another time that they've gone up.
Hmm.
Well, here's the rate so far. And this is according to Netcraft, which they find out what's going on out there as far as who's using what by constantly monitoring who's out there on the internet. Debian seems to be the most popular or fastest growing Linux distribution, actually. And let's see, second is SUSE, or SUSE, depending on who you talk to. And Gentoo, cool to see that because that's actually only been around for maybe two and a half years. So Gentoo is in third as the fastest growing. Red Hat is there in a slacking fourth. I think that had to do with the moving of Red Hat over to Fedora. Mandrake, and then Cobalt. From July 2003 to January 2004, Debian's been up growth rate of 24.6%.
Wow, that's pretty substantial.
Yeah. And Debian is one of the truest distros to the GNU sort of Linux heritage and way of thinking. They strive to use only all open source applications. They're one of the fewest, or maybe one of the only distributions that actually have a semi-working version of the GNU Linux. Well, it's a GNU distro with the Herd kernel, and the Herd kernel is actually the GNU kernel, which is the major portion of the GNU operating system that was missing because it's not really totally functional. And that's why the acceptance of the Linux kernel became really big. So some news on that front. Okay. Speaking of Linux, as we so do often on this show, Red Hat plans for security-enhanced Linux version. So it's going to come out sometime in 2005. Now, Security Enhanced Linux is short for SE Linux, which is the Linux project that was funded by and made by the NSA, which adds access lists to Linux, something that they don't have previously. Like Windows has access lists, like Windows 2000, Windows NT, all the server brands. But Linux does not have access lists, and it basically just gives more of functionality and control as to who can run what they can do with that, and what they can't do with it. Linux is kind of like read, write, execute with user, group, and everyone. There's a sticky bit, you know, stuff like that. So it's making it more complex, and it's built into the kernel. So the funny thing is, though, that this story, it kind of surprised me that this story came out, and it's on TechWeb, and it's talking about Red Hat's going to come out with SE Linux. Well, great, but I mean, Gentoo already has it. So, you know, where's this for Gentoo? Gentoo was one of the first, or the first, I believe, distribution to do testing for SE Linux. And what they do is that basically, let's see. Okay, there's no concept of root superuser. And the way it works is that root can actually be totally controlled as well with the access controls. But Gentoo has been testing it for a while, and what they do, and this is the same thing that Red Hat did, is they put an SE Linux server up. They give you root access, okay? You have root access, but they limit the computer to what root can do. Now, the thing that makes it, the reason that they give you root access, because root, by default, within the kernel and lots of other things, is programmed to be able to have certain types of relationships and understandings and permissions with certain programs and the overall Linux distribution. So, giving you root is, you know, something major. I mean, you really are at a prime stance of executing things and making things happen to break into a system. Well, the whole test is that even though you have that with the access lists and control and everything set up, and they were testing their default access lists to see that if you were in there as root, could you abuse things? And I don't know how long the Gentoo one went, but it went for a very long time. The Red Hat one, the first time it was up, it went for 45 seconds until somebody broke into it. And then after that, they came out with another version of you know, how they had set up their system. And I forget when they had it up, but it has yet to be broken into. So it's been up there for quite some time.
But now, if you're limiting what the root can do, now how do you get into the position to limit what root can do?
Oh, well, I mean, it's kind of set up a little differently for, I think, for these, like, war games. I think they're kind of set up, like, really locked down. Okay. What they do is they create another account that has the equivalent of root.
Uh-huh.
But that one isn't locked down. So you can, you know, but only they know the password or whatever to log into that one. So the idea with this is that they're saying, like, look, you know, we're going to give you root, which is the ability to interact with things. Like, would it be easier to break into something if you had root with access control list, or would it be easier to break into something if you were just some normal crummy user with access control list?
Yeah, that's true. And
yeah,
if it's still hard to do stuff with when you have a root, that's pretty darn secure. Because
yeah,
first you would have to get root, and then once you have it,
then do that.
You can't do much with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's no fun.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's it's, I don't think they'll the way the systems will come out will maybe be a little different, but what they're testing was totally hard, you know, coded with some major security in there. So I've messed with it a little bit. I'm kind of curious to see what the environment will be like. I have not downloaded the Gentoo one. I know it's just, you can just emerge the kernel and there you go, and then you just start setting up your access list from there. And I think it comes with some default lists, but yeah. So it's interesting, and it's out there. I think some credit needs to be shot in Gentoo's way, because they're definitely one of the pioneers of moving it out there rather than SA for creating it. Okay. All sorts of news. Okay, well, this is about, and I was just talking to you earlier, VR about it. It's a project, is the work of a gang of coders called TCNISO. And basically what they've done is they've created a program called Sigma, which released its final version last month, and it's reportedly been downloaded 350 to 400 times a day ever since. It's designed to be flashed into the non-volatile memory of certain models of Motorola Surfboard line cable modems, where it runs in parallel with the device's normal functionality. It gives the users almost complete control of their cable modem, a privilege previously reserved for the service provider.
Ooh.
So we've kind of talked about this before, where they've had, it's called uncapping. And uncapping, what capping is that you have an internet connection, and it's cut off at a certain speed, so it's called capped.
Well, it's limited, it's governed.
Yeah, and basically this just took the governor off the hood. Now, they had previous programs that were able to do that before, but I think that, I don't remember if they were firmware hacks or not. But this one is just, you know, the uberest of uncapping hacks of all. So it's just, you know, beyond that, it just gives you full control of all the features on those surfboard modems. So that's very interesting. I was looking in here because I didn't, let's see. I was trying to look for a website because, let's see, so many things that I look at every 2 weeks for the show. Well, you know, just Google TCNISO. And you should be able to find their website and download it and play with it if you have one of those modems. So,
yeah, that'd be kind of fun to mess with.
Yeah.
It just gives you more functionality, more control.
Well, VR, what do you think? What do you think about our space program? What do you think about us going into space and, you know, checking out places like Mars and colonizing places, and what's your thought on the future of things?
I think it's an absolute necessity because the Earth is a finite resource. So in order for us to continue to grow and develop economically and probably also mentally and spiritually, then we will have to, you know, take the next step and go out and acquire more, greater resources than what we have available here.
Yeah, the last show we talked about helium, was it? It was helium.
Hydrogen? I don't remember what it was.
Maybe it was hydrogen. Basically, there's an abundance of this gas, and I feel kind of like a dork.
That was hydrogen in the moon's...
The rocks.
Yeah, the rocks.
Yeah.
That was hydrogen, because that's a good fuel. It's a great energy storage medium, because all you have to do is kick on or kick off one electron. It's easy.
Yeah. Well, what's good about everything that's been going on that we'll speak about in a moment is that ever since the Chinese stuck somebody in orbit, now there's a little bit of competition, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It really kind of makes me mad, because we weren't thinking of going into space until the Germans wanted to go.
Well, actually...
Or no, was it the Russians?
Well, it was the Russians. Actually, it was funny. It's the guy who really got us able to do rocketry was a German. And he was actually experimented with his... He made his own little home rockets and was doing amazing stuff with them. And then, he came over here and we utilized him.
Yeah. So they were kicking our butts. They had the first man in orbit.
I think it's Brahm. Brahm something. Forget.
Hmm. But they were kicking our butts. They were the first ones to do a lot of things as far as the space program went, and getting into space. And we finally got there to where we got to the moon. Okay, so that was our big thing. We're America, yada, yada, yada. And we need to do something because these guys are communists and they're kicking our butts, right? So, once again, you know, the communists have come out, and China has put a man in orbit. And, well, what happens a month later? George W. Bush says, we're going to go back to the moon, and we're going to go to Mars.
Right.
Sucka. So, it's a big competition now. And that just, I guess I could shoot this over to the whole Linux thing, that the competition's good.
Yeah, that's what capitalist system's all about.
So, keep things going really well. Well, here's something else. Europe is to join the race to send humans to Mars.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense that they're somewhat contributing to the International Space Station. They might as well help with going to Mars.
We think it's technically feasible to have a manned mission to the moon between 2020 and 25, and then go to Mars between 2030 and 2035, said Franco Ongaro, project manager of the European Space Agency's Aurora Space Exploration Program. So that's cool, because I'm really excited by all this stuff happening. I'm really excited about, I don't really care who gets up there first, really, yeah, as long as
just,
we go.
Yeah, it's just the whole fact of that we're such an amazing organism that we can actually leave the environment in which, you know, that we live in. That's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah, you know, actually when I was driving home tonight, because it's I don't know if it's a full moon tonight or it's just on the brink of being a full moon. Maybe it'll be tomorrow's the full moon.
The 13th is full moon.
Okay. But
or is it the half moon? No, it's the 9th.
It's really, really close to being full moon. And I was just driving, and it was just kind of interesting because I'm looking up at it, and I'm trying to, instead of looking at it as like an aspect of like a cloud off in the distance or a mountain, I was trying to give myself relation as far as like I'm on this object, and there's another object out there, and there's a distance between that object. And I guess with the whole, talk of space and stuff like that and the things that we've already accomplished in the last 30 years, it's really putting into perspective, I think, within society that there's other things out there, and we're going there. So they kind of have to expand their beliefs and thought processes beyond just looking around what they see here.
Yeah, that there's more, and then there's so much more even beyond the moon and our solar system. And the amount of galaxies are almost unfathomable.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I was really hoping for, that in my lifetime, I know that we're living in this age where these exciting things are happening, and I was hoping that, they get off their butt and kind of move and go out there, because I want to see this stuff, before my lifetime's over. So that's...
Well, and the one way that I see that will accelerate that is everybody consume more. Consume.
Yeah, but we don't really want to do that, right? We want to be efficient.
Yeah, we want to be efficient, but if you really want to accelerate it...
Buy an SUV.
Buy 5 SUVs, just leave them idling all the time, have a gas truck come by and fill them up every day.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And then...
Or just fill your pool with gas.
Ooh, that too, yeah.
And blow it up.
Yeah.
Just for fun.
And so, so that will really get, the different industries motivated into acquiring more resources. So we evolve more from a class 1 society to a class 2.
What's a class 2 society?
Class 2 society has all access to all the available resources and energy in a solar system. Class 3 is... it's a class 1 that has all available access to energy of a continent. Then it's of the world. Then it's of the solar system. Then it's of a galaxy, then it's the universe. That's a class 5. The thing is that we already know that there is no class 5 civilization, which is really kind of neat.
Hmm.
So we have another thing to strive to be first at.
Sweet. We have a goal. all right. So, yeah.
That was Carl Sagan's little hierarchy or labeling of what kind of civilizations are.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah, it's a really neat way of thinking about it.
Things are really relational, and they're really simple. It's just that...
you just have to get down to, the
understanding a lot of the theory, and then you can just... Then all of a sudden, boof, it just comes in your mind. You're like, oh, I see it.
Yeah.
It's really simple. Okay. Well, we've talked about John Johansson, and we'd like to follow stories here and keep giving the information as things roll along. Well, he has been acquitted of copyright infringement, I think it was, it was the Digital Mining Copyright Act, and his use of CSS that, he wrote to decrypt DVDs. Well, he's been to trial twice, he's been acquitted twice, and now he's seeking damages.
Right on.
And so he should. Basically, they are seeking in U.S. dollars around $20,000. So he's not doing anything amazing.
Yeah, he's not like trying to. He's just looking for justice.
Yeah,
kind of like put himself back to where he was.
Yeah, they flew him over here. He had to fly over here twice, which is kind of neat because he gets to see the other country and stuff like that. But it's mental stress and all sorts of crap, and you know, waste your time. And
we probably had to take off work. You know,
yeah,
you still had to pay rent, all that other stuff, food.
Actually, his company backed him fully.
That's really nice.
Yeah, because he's a programmer, and then yeah, his company backed him up fully for what he was doing.
Well, they can probably, that's bragging rights for them. Like, yeah, we got the programmer who's getting sued right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, you know, I have a friend that, there's a lot of intelligent people out there. I have a friend that, he's got a product database. That's what they sell. It's a database of information, and I forget exactly what it is, but it's like contacts and stuff like that, businesses. And you have to pay to use this database. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that. They pay to collect the information. But, they have an on-staff programmer that programs the whole program for their company. It basically runs the backbone to their company. And, he said, hey, can you, like, take a look at this? Because I'm trying to open it up. It's in a Microsoft Access database, and the information here looks like it's all encoded and crap like that. So I really can't read it. So basically, he snapped up a program that offset the characters. One was 32, 64, and 128, taking the letters and scrolling through it.
Right.
You know, and they tried all three programs, and they figured out that the 128 one worked. So it just unraveled all the information. Of course, that's probably a little cheating, but you know,
well, no,
you're not paying for
it's
but
technology.
Yeah, so it's innovation, and yeah, so just kind of came up with that really quickly, and I don't know. There's just stuff like that all over that.
That's what everybody, you know, like a lot of people use for regular encoding anymore. If it was that easy to decode it, wow.
Yeah.
So that really says a lot for, you know, encoding.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, there's always people out there that are, there's always technologies out there that are really amazing. And there's lower versions, and there's the advanced versions.
And then there's military use.
Yeah. Which are the advanced versions? Which are modified for total conquering and...
Yeah. Devastation.
Devastation. And information, privacy. All right.
Because they can have privacy. We can't.
Not with the Patriot Act, no.
That's correct.
No, not with the Patriot Act whatsoever. And that is the only thing that really, you know, it's supposed to expire in, I think, about a year, year and a half. And that's something that, of course, Bush wants to renew. And I know, I understand that when you're trying to track a group of bad guys... It's not very easy playing by good guy rules to try to find the bad guys, okay? And I don't know. I didn't like it. I like the fact that it had an expiration date on it.
It was called the sundown clause.
Yeah.
It's really kind of neat. More legislation should contain them.
Yeah. And, you know, it did have... well, we did talk about people that weren't a part of the Patriot Act under, because it was for terrorism. That weren't terrorists that were getting prosecuted underneath it. I didn't think that was cool. Yeah, that's something to think about there. I really hope it goes away. I was really iffy about it being around. Still am. And it's done its job, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, it really did, because it allowed a lot of action to be taken towards those kinds of groups. And now most of that action has been taken. And now it's time, looks like it's about done.
Yeah, let's chill out with, you know, we had something happen to our country. Let's chill out a little bit on the Big Brotherism, so.
Yeah, because we don't need that all the time.
Okay. Sorry about that. Drinking my tasty beverage. Okay. All right, well, this is a very interesting story. I've never heard of these people in my life. But I did, once I read this story. They're three blind brothers.
Really?
Three blind brothers.
Are they triplets?
Yes.
Were they conjoined?
Actually, well, I think it didn't say if they're triplets or not. But it said they're all blind, or, you know, due to a birth defect at birth.
Oh, that just could be genetic. That doesn't mean...
Yeah, it could possibly. Yeah. Actually, you know what? No, because they're not triplets. That's right, because there's an older one.
Or they're all conjoined twins at the eyes.
No. No, they're not. Okay. Well, let's see. Remy, along with two of his three brothers, has since been blind since due to a birth defect. He and his sightless brothers have devoted their lives to proving that they can outthink, outprogram, outhack anyone with vision.
Ooh.
Their sighted brother, Ashraf is a baker with no tech leanings. They've been remarkably successful. Rami says dryly, a computer that is safe and protected is a computer stacked in a warehouse and unplugged. Israeli authorities agree. The 44 charges leveled against Rami, Muzir, and Shadi Badir in 1999 include telecommunications fraud, theft of computer data, impersonation of a police officer. The brothers' six-year spree of hacking into phone systems and hijacking telephone time ended when they were convicted of stealing credit card numbers and breaking into Israeli radio systems or stations' telephone system to set up an illicit phone company.
Wow.
Unwitting customers, mostly Palestinians of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, paid the fake telco for long-distance calls that were billed to the radio station. A lawyer close to the case said that the Badir's scam pulled in more than $2 million.
Wow. That's lucrative terrorism.
Yeah. Well, they're not terrorizing anyone except for the guy that has to foot the bill. Rami, the leader and most technical savvy of the brothers, was the only one sentenced to prison. Mazir 28, who was ordered to perform community service for 6 months. Tisk, tisk.
Oh, wow. For acquiring $2 million?
Yeah.
And oh, I'll work for 6 months. Thank you.
Yeah, Rami, he did 40. Okay, 6 months of community service. Shadi, 22, received a suspended sentence, not because he was innocent. The judge made clear because of his age.
Oh, was he underage?
I don't know. Didn't see that there. The Badirs pulled off mammoth-worthy phone cons, employing cell phones, braille display computers, ace code writing skills, and uncanny ability to impersonate anyone with corporate suits to sex-starved females. Wow.
That's some social engineering right there.
Yeah. What do you think, VR? Do you think we could pull it off?
With that voice?
No, not at all.
Okay.
See. Okay, on the phone, the brothers morph into verbal 007s, intimidating men, seducing women, and weeding classified information from steely voice security personnel. The phone figure's term for this is social engineering. Using a combination of brains and guile to obtain codes for trespassing into systems to rejigger them via strings of touch-tone code. Combine this talent with a super-sensitive hearing, the brothers can dissect an international connection the way wine expert Robert Parker pulls notes from a glass of Bordeaux. And all these names here are just not very good at. And you have what Bernie S. says is a legendary freaker and contributor to the hacking journal 2600 calls a formal skill set. 2 hours into an afternoon-long interview with the Hebrew-speaking Badirs, my translator's lips lock. He shrugs and tells me that the Badirs have shifted into a secret code. Rami later explains that as kids, he and Muzir developed their own language, reordering letters in mathematically complex ways after they discovered that other boys were snooping under their conversations. Please, said the God, curse our mother by giving her three blind sons, recalls Rami. Children beat us on the backs of our legs. Those abuses left scars in our hearts, but they also forced us to grow stronger.
Wow.
So.
That's kind of amazing, you know, that they... Well, it's kind of neat that they've developed their own language as well. It's probably one of the reasons why they're incredible coders, because, you know, they grew up doing, you know, essentially they developed their own language. It's what code is.
Yeah. Well, there's two things we learned here, is that handicaps aren't exactly handicaps, because they do open up senses in a wider range than people may open that sense up.
Yeah, that they become more adept at using their hearing, and so they can pick up those sounds and dissect them, which is really neat.
And the other thing to learn here is that don't screw with people that you think are handicapped, because they're definitely going to show you that they do have their own worth. Okay, well, another thing we've talked about. We do talk about a lot of things that we've talked about before. But as things progress, it's in the now, right? We're not going to talk about things that are always new. We're going to talk about things as they progress and as things happen. Well, November 15th, 15 privacy and consumer organizations called for manufacturers to hold off voluntarily on their plans to equip consumers' goods with wireless tracking devices. These devices, called radio frequency identification tags, are based on the same technology that lets cars pay easy pass tolls without stopping. The fear of these activists is simple. They're worried that instead of using it to track boots, blue jeans, and books, their so-called RFID systems will be used to track us.
Why would you even need or want to know where a pair of blue jeans went?
Well, no, it's kind of like the RFID sits in the blue jeans, and it goes by the checker, automatically rings it, and there you go. So,
wow. Yeah, but most people, most retail stores are not going to be very willing to tool up for that.
Well, Walmart is actually ready to unveil it. It's ready to roll out already. They've just slowed down because of the activists. They're one of the biggest pushers for it, actually.
Well, yeah, I could see that because it would cut down their loss from theft immensely.
Definitely.
Because then you walk out the door with something that hasn't been deactivated. Nope. Yeah, there you go.
RFID isn't a household word today, but within the next few years, manufacturers hope to put it in as many household products as possible. Last January, Gillette ordered 500 million RFID chips from a California manufacturing firm called Alien Technology. That's kind of an interesting name.
Yeah.
Gillette plans to put these tags into packages of its razors and blades so that the high-value consumer products or goods can be tracked as they move from the factory through distribution and eventually to the store shelf. Last March, Benetton announced similar plans to weave RFID tags into its designer clothes. The company reversed itself after a grassroots consumer group launched a worldwide boycott of Bennington products.
Right on. Yeah, because then, there's really, really no need to have an RFID tag in clothes.
Well, it does from a corporate standpoint, but as with most of these things, it can be abused.
Oh, yeah. And so, it may not be companies that could track you. They're wanting to track you. It's somebody else that could easily track you.
Well, here we go. This wireless technology could save American businesses billions of dollars. With RFID readers at the loading docks and on the store shelves, retailers could know precisely how many packages of, say, lipstick have been received and how many of them have been put on the shelves. And once every product in the store is equipped with an RFID tag, stores might even be able to automate checkout. Shoppers would just push their carts through a doorway and have their items scanned, and the cart would automatically total and charge to the RFID-enabled credit card in their pocket.
But what if... Now, see, here comes some other things.
That would kind of piss off the Walmart workers. They would probably have less of them.
Yeah, there'd be a whole lot less. But now, let's say, how do you deactivate it? Now, is the checkout thing going to also, scan the clothes that you have on that already have, IFT tags in, or have the tags in them, stuff in your pockets? Yeah, you can get charged for the same thing 50, 60 times very easily.
Well, that's a good idea. That's a good thought. I think that there's a serial number on each one, so it's unique. So that if it isn't in their database, then they won't charge you for it.
Well, barcodes aren't unique. They're unique to the product.
Well, you know what I mean? That's a way to fix that problem.
Yeah, it would be.
But that's one of the things that they're trying to discuss is how they can deactivate these things, because after that point of being purchased, the consumer has no need for these things. So,
make them biodegradable.
Yeah, but see how long is that going to take? And then they have, and actually these things don't have any, from what I know, there's no battery or anything like that on it whatsoever.
It's just a coil wire that has magnet on it.
Yeah, and once it's zapped, that's the energy that it uses to respond.
Because it just makes a little magnetic field that it picks up on. That is unique.
So it's actually good because it seems like people are just not rolling it out. And there's some hindrance here, and we'll see and report in the future, obviously, what we hear as far as things happening, if they find a way to deactivate it.
And thank goodness for activists. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, because you need somebody out there to, have an opposition sometimes. And
and if I knew you, you need to do better advertising. If any of you activists are actually listening, do better advertising.
Well, you know, actually, you know what? Just hit up Google and put in activists, and I'm sure you'll find quite a few.
Oh, yeah,
groups.
There's actually like, close to 1 million hits.
So there's a lot of
kind of impractical search.
Okay, let's see. Oh, very interesting stuff. Basically, Richard Stallman, which is the founder of the open source and GNU software, open source software, visited the president of India.
Really?
To discuss the uses and the benefits of open source software.
Well, India does have more, actually, computer jobs than the U.S. does now.
Programming jobs, yes.
Yeah, program.
The president, APJ Abdul Kalam, last Thursday, which is back in late January, played a host to two radically divergent poles of the global software industry. The first to meet with the president was Richard Stallman, the leading light of the free and open source software movement. Ironically, the people waiting in the presidential ante room for interaction to end were the people from Microsoft. Dr. Stallman has devoted his life to countering Microsoft's policy of selling software that cannot be charged or changed because its code is kept secret. It also can be shared because it also cannot be shared because of its license restrictions. Talking to the Hindu, the Dr. Stallman said the president was receptive to his views that development of software should be seen as a political and social issue and not just from the technological point of view. At a meeting that lasted 40 minutes, they discussed the need to give people an alternative way to use computers by popularizing open source software. The president said that it was a beautiful concept and that Mr. Stallman had prepared for the meeting by downloading Dr. Stallman's biography from the internet, which, in keeping with the FOSS movement, Guru's philosophy, is available free of cost. The article just goes on, but it basically says that he was very interested in the ideas, and I think that maybe since that is a big programming hub, that he wanted to hear what's all the news about open source and how to evaluate direction that he sees companies going in his company, country.
And if that actually took off there, imagine what that would do to the entire market.
Yeah, yeah, and Microsoft obviously is sitting out there saying, like, dude,
can't lose this account, man. We need this account. No.
Yeah, we're definitely at war, and I think a lot of times that Microsoft, came back with bad news. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably did. Because let's see, decision: free, or I have to pay for it. And wow.
And
I have to think about that for a while.
Yeah, it's nice to modify it too. I mean, you could always take it and modify it for your own uses. A lot of people have done that in many ways, in many times. Okay, well, if you have a cell phone, obviously you know about the things that have been going on with cell phones now. Getting the internet on there, getting cameras, which are decent quality, not anything to brag about. Trying to bring more to your device and making it wireless and giving you access to everything at your fingertips. Well, there is a new phone that's in development stages that should be coming out later this year for South Korea and Japan. What it will be doing that's different than all the other cell phones is you'll be able to get 70 channels of satellite television on it.
Oh, yeah.
So an entire 70 channels of satellite television. And that would be freaking cool. And obviously these devices are going to be, just by looking at this article, I can just totally see this happening. These devices are going to be, portals. Basically, you'll have this device and it'll be your cell phone. But what you'll do is you'll stick it in your car when you get in your car. And then it's going to be the receiver for your television that's going to be in your car that's going to get all the
So you can have as well the DVD player, but now you can have TV as well.
Yeah. So it's that's not, they didn't say that in the article, but I could just see how these cell phones are, everything is just going to be able to be plugged into it, and it's going to be an informational device, not just verbal communication, voice, but data too.
Yeah, but I still see there is one problem.
Yes.
Because there's 70 channels, and there's still probably nothing going to be on.
I don't know. Just depends on what your habits are.
Well, I've got 150 channels, and sometimes there's stuff on.
Yeah, there's a lot of bogus crap out there. One of the things that are...
And how much are they going to charge for it? And you're still going to get your commercials.
You know, that's why they're actually starting to take a lot more commercials off XM, which they say it's like commercial-free, but that's only some channels are commercial-free on XM radio, which is really stupid. If I'm paying $10 a month or whatever, like, I don't want to hear any freaking commercials.
Yeah, or I won't... Or there should be a commercial channel, so if I choose to pay
yeah,
to listen to
go over there.
Yeah, just
which is
turn
my biggest,
on the commercial channel.
Which is my biggest beef about going to watch a movie in a movie theater, is that you pay $7 to get in this crazy thing or whatever it costs nowadays, and you know I use my student ID. Once you get in there, you're subjected to 20 minutes of freaking advertisements.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go back and watch.
And then there are advertisements within the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know.
So it, actually, with all that advertisement, the movie should be like cheap to free.
Yeah.
And if you buy popcorn or whatnot with, you know, like $20 a bag, it should be just free.
Yeah. Yeah, $20 a bag. Yeah, the pricing there.
And then if you want the bin, well, yeah, that's your...
The pricing at movie theaters is just insane for popcorn and all that crap. Supposedly the theaters don't make so much money. I don't know. I don't own one. But anyways, okay, well, another cell phone technology that I'm reading about here that will be coming out here very shortly will be Nextel Wireless Broadband. It's going to be a service that's going to be offering speeds that are comparable to DSL on cable and wireless LANs, or wireline LANs, at 50 times faster than 28.8 kbps. Basically, what they're looking for are speeds. It's going to be anywhere from 1.5 megabits download to bursts as high as 3 megabits download, and a typical uplink speed of 375 kilobits, with occasional bursts as high as 750 kilobits off your cell phone.
Wow.
Or no. I'm sorry. You know what? I don't think this is actually off your cell phone. It's not a cell phone. Sorry. What it is, it's an adapter. A wireless adapter, and you put that in your laptop, and you get those speeds.
Well, that's really cool.
Well, the cell phone, like I know some cell phones you can actually use it as the adapter, plug it into your PC, and then get the speed. I don't know if they're going to incorporate it into the phones, but that's right. This one specifically talks about it just being an adapter that you would put on your laptop.
And so you don't even have you would. You know, no matter where you would be within range, you're at your own access point.
Yep. You can add VPN in here. You can add SSL links. You will get email, webmail, junk mail filtering, autoresponder, email forwarder, SSL email. You can get both private and public IP addresses. Wow, that's neat. I mean, you could have your own portable web server driving around town.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That would be kind of neat if we were filming something and we could stream it live as we're driving through our Nextel device and people can access it anywhere on the web.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
That's like kind of good, you know, maybe you can go to like a strip club, set up a camera there and just feed it back.
That's true. And you have a whole little showing, you know, back at the
Now that I think about it, there's a lot of security implications that could be had with this. I mean,
oh yeah,
you can set up cameras everywhere.
Well, you know, and then there's wireless little. There's I saw some wireless video internet cameras. Imagine you walk through, like, you know, go down to the Capitol or, you know, FBI building. You walk around and la la la. Oh yeah, I'm taking pictures of where everything is.
You know, that'd be kind of funny. You know, I was just thinking that if because a lot of times, like, you know, government agencies I know will outsource. If they don't have it in-house. So, you know, it'd be funny if they use Nextel as their, you know, way of doing wireless wiretaps and
oh, wow.
You know, video monitoring and stuff like that. You know, pay them to shoot the satellites or put the repeaters all over town, and then they just get their own account. And
yeah, they could.
That'd be kind of interesting.
Wow.
All right. Moving along here. Okay. Well, there is a new virus out there that's infecting computers and shooting a denial service over at SCO, which happened actually back on February 1st. The virus is known as MyDoom, and...
that's kind of fitting.
Yes. And let's see. A lot of people thought that the MyDoom virus was, and I don't know if it's true or not, but they thought that my CD player is just going crazy here. But that's all right. Thought that the virus was from Linux activists trying to target SCO.
Wait, let me guess. It's probably actually from SCO, but they did it to themselves so they can look like a victim and get sympathy from everybody and then charge for it.
Or it's just a group of spammers that want to open up systems and then blame the Linux activists.
Which were actually paid for and funded by Microsoft?
Who, the spammers? No, well, SCO, we think, is the... Who are you talking about?
Oh, the spammers.
Oh, no, that, I don't...
That they would be funded by Microsoft, so...
Wow, we're getting pretty deep here.
This is pure and unadulterated conspiracy theory.
Yeah, tune out from a logical discussion now. Oh, no. Experts say the creation of MyDoom was almost certainly funded by email spammers. The worm takes possession of a computer, either at the home or using a small business, and turns the machine into a remotely controlled robot program to send spam email messages. With hundreds of thousands of these zombie computers sending spam, the chances of shutting down the flow is almost zero.
Yeah.
So, on February 1st, they came out and got some major denial of service action over to SCO. And SCO was flat on their butt for a few days, and nobody could access their site. Then a variant came out and was attacking Microsoft. But I think Microsoft has been denial of service so many times that I think they're pretty well prepared for this one and seemed to not have much of an effect.
They went out for a coffee break.
Yeah. Yeah, they just...
It'll go away.
Go away.
We'll just let it be.
You know, with all those computers out there for Microsoft and they're downloading patches and stuff like that, that's certainly a lot of... You know, bandwidth, they have to have some major, major, major lines going into that place.
Yeah, like 50 T1s.
Yeah, or actually some like OC, like 198s or 192s or whatever. Okay. And along with that, SCO came out and said they are offering a total of $250,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible for this crime.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I hope somebody finds out who does it, because it's $250,000 less that they can pay their lawyers to annoy people. So.
That's very true.
So, frame someone, please.
I was wondering where they got the money from.
Yeah.
Instead of $250,000, we're just going to give you shares of our stock, which are going to be worth nothing.
Yeah, pretty soon. All right. And on to the SCO news that we packed to the back here, because... they like it from the back. So.
Is there a backdoor company?
Yeah. All right. Well, basically, SCO has now widened its Unix and Linux lawsuit against IBM, adding a copyright infringement claim to the already complicated case. The London, Utah-based company amended its claims against IBM on the eve of hearing about what information Big Blue needs to disclose to SCO. One of the numerous steps along the path of... scheduling trial for the a scheduled trial date of April 11th, 2005. Copyright infringement is a major new element in the SCO current accusations. IBM breached its contract with SCO and misappropriated trade secrets, yada, 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 yada. Basically, it has not issued what exactly the infringement claim is yet. Well, as of this article, which is February 5th, but I'm not quite sure what it's going to be. But I think it's obviously going to say that, you know, they misappropriated code in different ways and attaching a new way of how the code is theirs and how it's been infringed. So so they're adding that to it.
Right on.
Yeah. Yeah, just let the mud wrestling match continue.
Yeah, and, well, if there's enough of these cases that keep coming up, the Digital Copyright Act will have to be altered in some way or another.
You know, what I'm thinking is that when does the judge say, okay, SCO, hold on, just let's just deal with the crap you already put on the table. You know what I mean? Like, I just, things get so convoluted. I mean, it's just, that's really tough. And here's some responses that Linus Torvalds has on SCO. I'd like to read what Linus has to say, because He's got some pretty intelligent thoughts on the subject. Okay, the question to Linda says, Sco claims that old Unix files, it says it owns, are now in Linux. Can you explain to me why you think that's wrong? And a number of files Sco claims to own were written from scratch for Linux. Sco also doesn't hold any copyrights to the BSD code, software developed at the University of California at Berkeley, that Sco says contained copyright material that was passed along to Linux. Nor is it actually in Sco's version of Unix, so Sco is wrong. Also, Sco is apparently, has apparently several times mentioned how copyright notices have been removed. Just for the record, original Unix does not have any copyright notices to remove. They were added after the lawsuit between the Berkeley developers and AT&T, which was settled. So Sco would be wrong again. So basically, Sco's arguments are just too wrong to even discuss rationally. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Sco doesn't even own copyright on the files they are talking about. The University of California at Berkeley does. But even if they did, the Linux files were copied in the first place. And even if they had been copied, no copyright notices would have been removed since they didn't exist in the original. There are literally several levels of Sco being wrong. And even if we were to live in that alternative universe where Sco would be wrong, or would be right, they'd still be wrong.
Yeah. That is pretty crazy that they're saying that they own and there's copyright infringements on stuff that were written completely separate from them at a different time.
Yeah. Yeah, and if there was any copying of it, you know, and a lot of stuff that they
did. It would really be just coincidence that it would match up to something that they wrote.
They had gotten later.
Yeah.
And it's really deep. I'm trying to follow it myself. But, you know, it depends. Some code could get somewhere at certain times, and as it did, you know, depends on who owned what code at one time. And, you know, as they've said, for Linux, mostly they don't really want anybody else's code. So any snippets that they did find that were similar, they just took them out and rewrote them.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're really not, nobody in, you know, the supports Linux is really trying to say, like, look, we may have code. And we, you know, they're not trying to make the argument. Basically, Linux wants to have their own code. If there's any code they got in there somehow at some point, sometime, they want to change it.
They want to rectify it.
Yeah, they want to rectify it.
Otherwise, you know, Sco is still pushing all this. They're just being, you know, the aggressors and attacking and bullying.
Yeah. So, you know, for obvious reasons. But, yeah, let me see. There's a few other questions that he had responded to. No. Basically just more of the same stuff.
So I really think that somebody needs to come after them with, like, frivolous lawsuits.
Well, they have. We've talked about before, there have been a few people that have gone after them with those lawsuits. I haven't heard any responses of what's happened since then, so I'm not sure. Okay, well, that wraps it up for pretty much almost everything except for the updates on the conference idea that me and a few people, I think, have had down here. Well, here's what's going on. I put the information out there to see who would be interested in having a conference down here in Arizona. It's a nice warm place. It's the fifth largest city in the United States. There's lots of things to do here, lots of places if you wanted to come for the con one day and go off and, you know, see some of our great land around here, you could do that as well. Well, the responses I got back were generally pretty good. Most people were very interested in the idea. A lot of people wanted to really contribute, and I was really trying to see who really wanted to support this thing to see if it's something that we should actually put our effort into doing. And I think that once we put some more concrete plans in place, we're really going to know if we're going to do this or not. So we're going to definitely need everyone's support, and everyone needs to really let us know how much they would really like this thing to happen. Now, in order to do that, of course, we have our forum posts over there at binrev.com in the forums under the general hacking forum. And there's a sticky there for our post. And add anything you can to that. And then what we're going to do eventually, very shortly, I've been talking with Rax here at the 2600 meetings in Arizona. We're going to find a place to put all the information and all the discussion about the conference and have it in one area. And we're probably going to do that in the DC602.org forums. Or if we really know that this is going to take off, obviously we're probably going to put a site up and do it there and obviously let everyone know to spread the word. So here's what's happening so far, is that we've looked at prospecting places, and we're trying to gauge the entire size of the group and some of the activities what we're going to be doing, so the type of facilities that we need to accommodate us, also price and stuff like that, because we may be doing things like you know, having a pre-register to where you'd send off maybe $10 of the registration fee and let us know that you're really going to be coming, and that would hold a registration for you, and that would also help us get an idea of how many people we know are really going to be coming to the conference. Of course, if anything fell through, everything would be refunded. But on top of it, too, depending on the cost or something like that, what we would do before, so we could determine what the cost of the conference would be, obviously we wouldn't want it to be too expensive, and we'd want it to be comparable to, you know, maybe the cost of DEF CON or one of the other conferences to be able to get into the conference. But we would put a price of what our expenditures would be and estimated of how many people would show up, and split that and be really upfront with people and really, you know, try to let you know that we're doing this out of the interest of taking this community that we have and bringing it to the next level and really allowing people to share and learn. And I think we're going to do a few different things at this conference that other conferences have not done or don't do all the time.
Ooh, kind of like have a Burning Man kind of geek,
you know what,
thing. I call it Burn Con.
Desert Con. No, I don't know what it would be called. But we have, actually, you know, that's one of the things that somebody came up with, and I forget who it was, at the Phoenix 2600 meetings, the idea of, kind of like what the Chaos Computer Club does, is if we did it, like, outdoors, you know, somewhere.
Well, that'd be easy enough. You just get a bunch of generators and do some solar panels, and whoever has a generator or some solar panels, you all, you know, hook it up, and you create a little power grid.
Yeah, so we might, you know, we might do something like that. The Chaos Computer Club, they actually do like a sort of a camping thing. Not quite sure what that's going to entail, what we're going to do. Right now we're thinking of indoors, but, you know, we're being creative and trying to think of something to bring the most interest for someone to come out and to really get their weekend's worth of a trip out here to Arizona. So my update is that. And to keep under to keep abreast of what's going on, check out the BinRev forums at binrev.com and check the posts that we have there. And I think sometime this week I will put up some new information there to update people as to what's going on and a place to where we can have all this discussion and get things going. But it looks very promising, and I think we're going to be able to do it. And I'm really looking forward to pulling everyone's efforts together and really making something that's going to be totally awesome. And we're going to be using some hacking skills of our own to hack this conference out and make it go. So,
and actually and build a great big wooden computer, and on the last day we burn it and dance around it.
You just want to burn stuff. And maybe, what you know what, bring in your own flamethrower. They may not let you use it at the hotel, but we'll go somewhere else. And
yeah, all right.
But so that's the updates, and yeah, feel free. You know, we want to encourage everyone to check out the forums at slipknot.org, and obviously put some information there about the show. If you want me to read a story, if you got a letter, feedback, if you think we suck, if you think we totally rock, just go to slipknot.org/forums and drop us a line there. And then, of course, always send email to In The Now with the email address of slipmode, S-L-I-P-M-O-D-E, at quest, Q-W-E-S-T dot net. And the header line would be In The Now, so I don't delete it on accident.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, this is the February 8th, now February 9th, actually.
Oh, yes, we have actually done almost a two-day show.
Yeah, two-day show. We just went over midnight here. This is our show, and this is Slip Mode heading out. Be back in 2 weeks, and Sidekick
PR saying later.
All right, we will see you then.
Thank you.